What's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode here on the Architect Network. Today, we're going to be talking about the future of BIM. Now, with everything going on in the industry, with the introduction of AI, game engines taking over, real-time rendering disrupting the industry, we can't forget about good old BIM. It's still one of the foundations of being an architect. It's still the bread and butter of how we actually deliver buildings these days. So I thought, who better than to get in the man, the myth, and the BIM legend, Holvaag Vasselg. I know he's going to kill me for how I pronounce that, but I wanted to bring him in to talk about how he got in, or how he transitioned from being an engineer architect to a design technology specialist and BIM specialist at Snohedda, to then transition to where he is now, where he founded his own company, Reop, where he builds custom tools and BIM workflows to deliver major projects. And so we're going to be discussing also where we currently stand in the industry in terms of BIM, the problems that we currently face, and then also the future of BIM. What are we most excited about? Will AI, for example, be a big trigger in finally delivering the promise of BIM to the industry? As always, if you like this video, please share with your friends and colleagues. We want to spread the word about Architect Network. You can also give us a like and a subscribe here on YouTube. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram. We do also have our own ATN Revit Masterclass, which is just about to be released. And we'll be going from complete zero to hero in Revit. And shortly, we'll be following that up with a Rhino Inside Masterclass using the same case study project, which we'll be announcing very shortly. So we should have that, I'm hoping, in April. But otherwise, without any further ado, let's jump into it and have a conversation with Holvaag. I like it. All right, so we're live. Holvaag, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this one, actually. It's good. Saw you a few months ago in Valencia and seemed like a good time to get you on the podcast.
Do you remember Valencia?
Yeah. There's a lot of technical BIM discussions and over some beers, you know.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you for inviting me, man.
Awesome. So I want to give the audience a little bit of an introduction to you and your background, and before we jump into kind of the nitty gritty part. So you are a Norwegian engineer slash architect. I liked on your LinkedIn profile, your heart says you're an architect, but your head says you're an engineer. I feel that is... That should be like the mantra for all architects, I feel like. Your heart is an architect and your brain is an engineer. You're the founder of Reop and Anchor, which we'll jump into. You're one of the infamous bad monkeys, which we'll also explain to the audience what that is. And you have quite an extensive background of working at different firms, but you've spent a good few years as like a design technology, a similar position as myself at Big, but you've worked in dark architecture, Ramble, and Snohedda. So you've kind of really gone through like quite an awesome experience, and now you've set up your own company and ventured off on your own, which is super exciting and we'll touch on. I don't know if you want to add anything more to that introduction, but I think it was you're kind of a very prominent figure in the BIM world. So I thought, who better than to talk about the future of BIM and where we are in the world of BIM?
It's a scary topic, but possibly you have given me the best introduction that I've ever heard. So thank you.
That's what we do. That's what we do at ATN. So maybe to kick things off, let's just talk about how you got into BIM and design technology and all that kind of side of things, right? Because you trained as an engineer, right? And it seemed like you worked for a bit as an engineer, and then you kind of moved over to this specialization in BIM and computation and coding and all this kind of stuff.
I think my exposure to BIM was both a coincidence and not a coincidence. I'll try not to go too far back in my life, but...
the origin story.
Yeah, exactly. I was born on a windy night I was actually, and no, I think as a lot of people in the building industry, I suspect as a lot of people in the building industry, I was very fond of building things when I was a kid. I was very much into Legos, and in the north where I'm from, you know, snow caves is a big thing. They last from September to May, so you can like have a long-term project during entire season.
Oh, wow.
Building snow caves, yeah. That was my that's the most probably Norwegian one of my
architecture thing I can think of.
They're amazing, and I would turn them into prisons and lock my brothers in them. No, so always fond of building things, and then we figured out. I suppose it was me and my mom largely. I was pretty good at math and physics and all of those topics in high school, so we figured out that structural engineering would probably be a good match, and I thought that it was going to be for a long time. But I think I had some, so when I came out of university and I worked as a structural engineer, I didn't really like it that much, because I felt that the creative promise was not fulfilled. Probably I should have been more patient, and probably there's like a ton of creative structural engineers out there who are feeling creative in their job. I wasn't. So, and through coincidences in life, I was exposed to CAD. I won't bore you with the details, but I was exposed to CAD, and then also through coincidence, basically my ex-girlfriend turned into my ex-girlfriend, and she broke up with me, and I had to move from Drammen to Oslo, and then a friend of mine said, "Oh, there's a job open in Oslo. You should check it out." And it was a kind of like an AutoCAD job, teaching architects how to use AutoCAD. And mm-hmm. I got into it. And in that job, we went on a conference, and I saw Revit for the first time. It was in summer 2005. Cool. I'm still in touch with the people actually at the conference that showed me Revit for the first time, And then I'd been using AutoCAD for 2 years, basically, but I understood enough at the time to know that this is the future. And back then it was as simple as, you know, you're not moving that wall in five different drawings.
That's interesting. And then
sorry.
No, go on.
No, I suppose I was in a. I like this expression, you know, position yourself for luck, and I guess in that time and space, I was positioned for luck, because Revit kind of hit me in the face out of nowhere, and I started grabbing it and learning it and using it and showing it to people, and then like a few years later, I was basically considered like a Revit expert, at least in Norway.
Right.
So that was a start, I think. Yeah.
What was the conference? I talk a lot about conferences being, especially if you're interested in like design technology stuff. I think conferences are one of the most like game changing things to go to. I think my transition from an architect to like being more on the digital side was from going to Fabricate in it whilst I was at uni. And then Smart Geometry in 2014 in Hong Kong. And then you meet people, and then that's how it kind of begins.
It's the same for me, man. Game changer. Turned my life upside down.
Do you think that's still relevant now? Like, are conferences as important as they used to be now that everyone's online and, you know, that kind of thing? I'm still a big believer in conferences, but... You know, I wonder if maybe the model is changing.
I think it's like, I think you have to look at conferences from a variety of different perspectives, because there's like multiple things about conferences. There's learning about, you know, how to use a tool or a technology, and there's like learning how to do this and learning how to do that. And but it's the social aspect also. And for me, I don't think it's just because it opened up a world for me back in 2005. But also, I think I am inherently like pretty social guy, and I like meeting people. So I've never been too happy about the online conferences. Or I like, right. I mean, come on, you can learn things and everything. But for me, it was always the social component was extremely important. Like we did in Valencia, you know, you have a completely different type of conversation when you're sitting next to each other in the streets in Spain and like drinking beer and talking shit. So
that's when the magic happens.
That's what great ideas. And I think that's very important, and also important in the future.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good one. That's interesting. So conferences were a big part of your transition and also mine from an architect. And so you worked in like Snowheader and dark architecture, and you found out how annoying us architects and engineers can be in the world of BIM and designing different things and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure my experience at BIG is very similar to what you experienced in Snowheader, which maybe we'll touch on later. But then you kind of ventured out to your own thing, starting with the Bad Monkeys and now Reop. Maybe we'll touch on Reop, which you started a couple years ago now, or a bit more than that.
It is now in January. It is actually exactly, and we're recording this in January. Oh. It is exactly 5 years since I left my job. Yeah.
I should have done better research. I'll just check my LinkedIn page.
That's
time
okay.
Time flies, man. I feel, as I was saying it, I was like, no, that doesn't make sense, because I remember talking to you in New York, which was like a good few years, you know. Time flies, man. I feel like COVID just disappeared.
COVID make 5 years go like this.
Yeah, it's like 2-3 years. Talk to us about venturing out with Reop, how you got started, and we also, let's touch on, you know, what it was like to start your own company, because that's one thing architects and engineers we're not so great at is the entrepreneurial side, and that's also a big part of what we're interested in on ATN is what was that process like for you? Because at the beginning it's all like, well, I'm starting a company, it's all exciting, but then you got to get the ball rolling and get clients coming in and all that kind of stuff. And it seems like you're at a great point now. I mean, you're almost like you have a team of 10 or 12 people, I think I saw from your website. You've just branched off one of your tools into its own thing. It's kind of an exciting time for you right now. But talk to us about that process and where Reop emerged from, and the elevator pitch for what is Reop for the audience that haven't seen it yet. I'll put a link into your website underneath the video here, so you can also, whilst you listen to this, the audience can go and check out both your websites. Give us a little bit of your journey to starting Reop.
Yeah. So every time, or when I think about this, I'm always, I guess right now I'm like evaluating where do I start? Where does the story start? And so I had Bad Monkeys, like I was a part of the Bad Monkeys. This was a group that we established almost 10 years ago now with all the first Dynamo guys, experts, I guess you can say. I think the Bad Monkeys, we inspired each other maybe even more than we like to think or reflect on. And I think a lot of us inspired each other to kind of like break out. Breakout sounds like we were in a prison, which was not the case. I was really enjoying working at Snowheader. I loved working at Snowheader for so many different reasons. I think it was like in reality, it was I came home from Otters University 2017, again, the conference. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking to some of the other Bad Monkeys, in particular like Adam Sheeter, who is in Brisbane. And like we did in Valencia, you know, you have a couple of beers and you sit there and talk. And then I came home and did a little bit of thinking at the same time. Again, like talking about positioning yourself. Well, look, someone reached out to me to ask if I was interested in building a couple of automation tools for Revit on a big project in Oslo. And then when these two things happened at the same time, and also I had the backing, like the how do you say, like the coding backing of the Bad Monkeys, so we could do things together, and we were already doing like freelancing gigs, both training and custom development for people around, for me especially in Europe, in addition to my job at the Snøhetta. So it's like all these three things happen at the same time. So I felt that, oh, it's about time to make the leap of faith and to see if it works. And funny enough, just a few days ago, I think I told someone that I think I'm very happy that I had my experience in architecture, like both from a social point of view. I have some of my best friends from that time today. And also I learned so much, but why didn't I do this before? I mean, what was I scared of?
This is what people always say, but, I can actually see the same thing. Like, I'm assuming it was quite a difficult choice, right? Because it's easy to leave a job or a company if it sucks working there, right? But you never think the other way. If it's great, that's a problem, because it's like, I'm leaving this great thing behind. I've got a stable salary and blah, blah, blah. You know, all the typical things. So I'm sure that was a tough move.
If you're purely thinking about work and maybe money, then I'm kind of thinking, why didn't I do it before? I should probably do it before. But from a social point of view and emotional point of view, I'm so grateful that I had that I was able to be part of some pretty amazing design teams, both at Ramble and Dark and Snøhetta, and the great friendships that I have from that time, like really one of my best friends from Snøhetta. I don't regret it, but it has been a bumpy ride. I mean, it's no sunshine story, but it has gone well. I suppose you say that we're actually 13 people today, I guess then you can see it's working, it's fine. And we're kind of like, someone came to me like a few months ago and say, hey man, start relaxing, you're okay now.
You're safe. That's amazing. I mean, you've got like a full team, and you've just launched Anchor as its own thing, right, just now? Do you want to give the audience a little pitch of what Reop offers as a service, and also like specifically what's Anchor, for example?
Yeah, I can start with Reop and do it chronologically. I mean, the what we did at Snøhetta, and it's pretty cool. I love this. Some of the projects I was working at with at Snøhetta, we collaborated with the Bad Monkeys. So specifically, I was like, on some projects I was using code that Conrad and Dimitar were like sitting and coding in their Dynamo packages, and then sharing through the Dynamo package manager, and I'd like update the package and then put it into the code of the project. And that was a really cool way of working. I don't think it's like completely new. I didn't think of anything new. I've spoken to a lot of architects who used to work like this in the 80s. You know, they had a guy with glasses and like a coder somewhere. But that way of working with a developer integrated into with the BIM workflow together with the team at Snøhetta, it kind of like, I was thinking, oh, this has value. I mean, this more people should have access to a developer like Dimitar, and to a a team of developers like we are. So that's where Reop came from. Our company was called Bad Monkeys for a few years, and then we rebranded to like be able to have a laser focus on our brand and what we are doing. But in short, it's being the custom developer team for small and medium architectural firms and engineering firms. Maybe the big ones, they usually have a development team, and then a lot of companies don't.
They come to you and you build like custom workflows and tools and things like that, right?
Yeah. And then it's a value being a team because different people know different things. Dimitar knows the Revit API and Veronica knows the web development. And then it makes sense for a lot of people out there who are doing a lot of manual work and to be able to automate that together with someone who knows architecture and knows BIM.
And so then some of these workflows that you created, you actually turned into tools as well, right? That people you now have a toolbar and a plugins for Revit and things like that, that you now is kind of like a part of that is now separate as Anchor, right?
Yeah. So maybe it's three parts of this rocket. Like the first was the custom development and all of these custom workflows. And then some of the workflows that we developed, we put into a Revit toolbar and created the automation. It's a set of tools that automate Revit in different ways. And some of them were useful for other people. So we put that into a Revit toolbar and then give away some of them and sell some of them for a pretty reasonable price. But then about a year ago, we were looking at all the different jobs that we had been doing for the last 4 years and saw that there was a common denominator to a lot of them. And it was a lot around data management and using BIM tools to create large data sets. And then we built Anchor and decided to branch it out into a different company.
That's cool. So it's an exciting time. I feel like you're really, really flying. Maybe to describe the Bad Monkeys from an outsider perspective, I kind of always saw you guys as like this Avengers team of these BIM legends that were in the industry. Because I think I was getting into this space, I came across you guys this looks really cool. And I think that there is something kind of interesting in that, I guess you could call it like an Avenger business model. I don't know if that's a technical term of bringing in all these people with different expertise and specialism, and you kind of bring them under some kind of umbrella and work together on things. There's something about that which I think is quite interesting and potentially useful in the future, especially when you get maybe new business models with blockchain and these kind of decentralized organizations. There's something quite interesting in that. And then, you kind of morphed into more of an established company and, products and things like that. So it's a pretty amazing, amazing journey. If you're struggling with Revit, go check out the Revit website and the tools that you guys offer. So, little plug there for you. I think you've been on a really interesting journey, and it's no easy thing to start your own company, and it seems like you're really, really taking off now, so congrats. And but on that note, I think let's discuss a little bit about BIM as a whole. Let's open the can, so to speak. So how do you feel like the era we're in right now in terms of BIM? And to set a little bit of a context of, I think on most architects and practices, right, BIM is becoming more and more of a staple. I think it's you're finding it's rare to find firms that don't have some kind of Revit process or BIM process in architecture practices. There's all these different plugins and features. We now got Rhino inside, so we can do Rhino and Grasshopper stuff inside Revit and our BIM process. But at the same time, we have this is all kind of fairly established at this point, right? But all around us, we've got, BIM has become a staple, but all around us, we've got AI coming off. We've got game engines and blockchain and metaverses and all this kind of stuff. And good old BIM is still the foundation of what we actually do and what we actually, I'll go back to the office now and I'll be in Revit producing stuff that we need to deliver. But there's always been a kind of failed promise of BIM at the moment, right? We've, Revit has almost stopped developing and things like that. So how do you feel, where do we sit right now in terms of the adoption of BIM and the current BIM tools we have in our industry? Like, do you think we're at a point of plateau and maybe there's going to be like a next big thing that's going to come and a next big spike? Is that driven by AI? So it's not a question that you can answer, but like, what is your feeling of where we are in BIM right now in the industry?
I think I probably feel the same thing that a lot of people feel, is that, or I don't know, maybe not. I don't think a lot of people will disagree with me with the fact that most BIM creation tools for architects are more than 25 years old. And that's a little bit of a paradox when you consider the changes that society and the world has gone through the last 10 years, that we're still sitting in good old BIM, you know, and coordinating ducts and pipes and windows. and there's so much manual work going on. And at the same time, maybe to reflect on this first, I mean, it's, For me, digital transformation or the adoption of technology in architecture has been a bit of a paradox, because it feels like it's going fast and slow at the same time. You know, it felt like BIM adoption was so slow, and at the same time, technology in general in society is going so fast. So, you know, I don't get it how these two things can happen at the same time. And it's a paradox that I can only reflect on and describe, but not completely explain, I suppose. Yeah. So, but what is better today than it was just 5-10 years ago, in my opinion, is that you don't have to fight the BIM cause anymore so hard, maybe. I mean, 10 years ago, I was still trying to convince people to work in a database together with other people. Yeah. Maybe we don't have to do that anymore. But at the same time, it's really crazy that highly educated and skilled and passionate and creative engineers and architects are spending so much time like doing all so much non-value creating activity with BIM. Mm. That's a little bit of a conundrum that I can't explain.
A lot of people don't realize how old like programs like Revit are. They are 20, 25. I think Revit is 20 years old, 25 years old. You know, and it is painful when I teach like, you know, really talented, intelligent architects and something works really well. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. This is great. And then I show them like, yeah, this thing does not work. You have to put a view on top of a view and then put a masking region and like, hack it through this because you can't switch this thing off or change its color. So I feel like we are in this era of it's, you know, BIM is fairly well adopted in architecture practices now, and I even in Big, for example, it's not like I don't have to convince many of the product leaders and, you know, management and stuff like that about BIM. Like everyone gets it now, and they kind of want it. I think the question is now, like, they kind of want it better than what I can give them with the tools we have. So yeah, I think we with all these things going on, right? I'm having podcasts on AI, and every week there's something new. And yes, there's plugins for Revit about AI, but it's nothing really to do with BIM or anything like that. It seems like we are in a bit of a plateau where we're getting really good at adopting it into our design, you know, design process. Like I think we've, for example, at Big, we've got a really solid foundation of BIM. We have a great workflow from our Rhino space to Revit and all this kind of stuff. We've adopted Rhino Inside and all these kind of things. But ultimately, feel like we're waiting for that next, the true promise of BIM, the next like iteration of BIM which to me seems like a no-brainer that it's a game engine-based Unreal, let's take Unreal Engine-based program that allows you to design, visualize, and BIM all at the same time and flexible. But whenever I speak to the people making these tools, like, you don't realize how difficult that is. So we're kind of in this era where we're waiting for the next big thing so we can, maybe merge our tools or that kind of thing. I don't know if you have the same perspective, but yeah, I think game engines and maybe all this stuff might trigger this next innovation.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to be the next thing. I was part of the transition from CAD to BIM, like at the very start of my career. So I like had a glimpse of the CAD to BIM transition, and maybe this next transition we will not maybe notice it until it's happening, or maybe it will be like I think that you wrote some time ago on LinkedIn that it's going to be something completely different. Something has to happen. Like we can't do 25-year-old BIM processes forever into the future. And I think like someone asked me a few years ago, like what was the real? I don't remember what the question was, but I got into an answer at least that made sense at the time. Like what was the real benefit of Dynamo and Grasshopper? Like when these tools came around, everyone got excited about like automating Revit parameters and automating like CAD geometry in Rhino and parametric design everything. But I think the real value, like the real industry value of these tools, eventually, probably today also in some capacity, but eventually is going to be all the architects and engineers who started to get into coding, like a generation of designers with domain knowledge about what it means to be like an not just domain knowledge and educational and experience, but also like thinking and having the heart as the architect and the brain as the engineer, and having that as a background and then getting into serious coding, I think is going to somehow transform the industry in a very, very good way. Because that was not the case 30 years ago. There's articles on the internet saying like some guy talked about BIM in the 60s. And then how long did it take until it was actually on your computer?
That's a good point. I like the generational, there is a generation, like the architect, the user has to transform as well to a degree. And I think we've been slow to do that because, especially as architects, we just love to design. So we just want to design things, and the technology and the tools that we use is kind of secondary, which it kind of should be. But I think that's a big part of why we started ATN was to, promote a bit more conversations about technology and architecture. And we call them architects, other people call them super users, but like digitally fluent architects, I really see architects that have all of those components of you can design, you've got good personal skills, like being able to talk to people and communicate, but also having that tech side, you understand BIM and computation and all these other things. Those will be the next, I feel that the next kind of game-changing architecture practice will be a collection of those, a bit like the Bad Monkeys, right? It's a collection of super users. So I think that's a really good point, actually, which you don't often think about in terms of like why BIM has not been adopted. And you do get those, like, in terms of going back to your question of like why do we use this BIM stuff? And there are these dream stories. Like only the other day, I came across an article on Frank Gehry, where it's a I think it was a Harvard Business School paper. And it talked about how Frank Gehry always delivers his projects on budget and on time. And I was like, I never read that. Actually, I was like, oh, I've actually never seen it. I've read some stories about it, but I didn't realize it was like a repeating thing. And when you read into the article, it was kind of two things. One was his process was extremely digital, and you know, they modeled everything down to the nut and bolt. And it means that most of their products, there was almost no change orders because they thought it through and tested it and all that in some kind of BIM environment. For them, it was probably CATIA or as well as Rhino and or whatever. And the other thing was the contractual setup was that they were the lead consultant, even the contractor sits underneath the architects and all that kind of stuff. So the stories are there. And I've also lived the story of working at Front and working on the Morpheus Hotel. We designed, like, helped build the facade for this crazy building. And we didn't have a single change order. It was like, you know, fit like a glove. And so there are these stories, but it's just not, it's not filtered through to architects yet. And I think it's for those two reasons. It's kind of one is, you know, the personnel, like architects have to adopt with it. And two is, you know, the adoption of the tool and also the industry. Like as architects, sometimes we just hand over some drawings and that's it. And we, you know, off to the next project. So it is a tricky one, but yeah, I do feel like there's something still, the tool itself is needs to evolve soon. And that's the big question mark.
Absolutely. I have a project like that as well. That was just like wonderful. Yeah.
We all have and, these like proofs, right? That it does work, but it almost needs to be like this special contained thing rather than it, you know, how do we implement that on a industry scale is the tricky question.
We're not really, as an industry, I don't think we're really being capable of taking those scenarios, those projects where something really works well and then scale it to an industry. It's a classic, probably, or even inside a small team, you know, that's difficult. But no, I think a lot of people have spoken about that before, like the AEC industry's inability of reusing the intellectual or the intelligence, the design intelligence that's been developed in one project that doesn't get transformed to another. So, and this is true as in the industry, it's through between continents and countries and corporations and projects, I think, on all levels. So that's in some capacity, you know, coming back to the conversation about conferences, maybe, you know, one of the most important reasons why people who want to do something and have done something should meet and talk to try to make that happen. I've always felt like when I've been working with Anchor a lot the last year, it made me think of something that one of my friends from architecture from Snøhetta actually told me, like, I would just like this free place where I can be creative and do whatever I want, like a sandbox playground situation, kind of like Rhino, but then all the BIM stuff maybe could just happen in the background automatically, like all the classification and all the coordination and all the, you know, bam, 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 all the things that you... So, I mean, that's what I'm thinking about when you say it. I completely agree. You know, there's so many things that a designer should not... it's a waste of time for someone to like consider all the 15 ways you can hide an element in Revit, like
that's a great example.
Why? Yeah. So all of the BIM stuff should just happen automatically in the background, and then do whatever you want in your tool.
It seems like all the components are potentially out there, right? We have all the solutions. Like there's all these things that could achieve that. It just needs to be put together in an intelligent and graphical way. Is there anything out right now which either gives you a flavor of like what the next generation of BIM is going to be like, or potentially is the next generation of BIM? I mean, we've talked in previous podcasts, blanking on the name now, but Hyper, it kind of is and it isn't at the same time, but there's elements of that, like a environment that is online that has some kind of BIMI things. I know there's a couple other companies that are making something, but yeah, I don't know if you have any that, you know, you kind of see potential in or indicates that what the future of BIM could look like.
I feel a little bit like you said, there's bits and pieces around. There's different companies and different collections, communities of people who are doing things together that look like they can be like a piece of that. They're name dropping, Speckle, Hypar. I mean, I'm working with Anchor because I think that we can be a part of that, although there's like a million things that we won't solve.
Right.
So maybe in the future, someone will build something that is going to make these things come together. I stopped writing things in Word a few years ago because now I'm doing it all in Google Docs because at Rio we have the G Suite and blah, blah. Yeah, so you do everything in Google Docs and you write a report together. Like the AU presentation I did together with Harsh, we wrote in Google Docs.
Yeah,
and that makes a lot of sense from a lot of different points of view. You can collaborate. You don't have to be in the same place. And he can write whatever he wants and I can write whatever I want. There's like change management happening automatically and commenting and everything. And we both write in English, so we understand what each other are writing. I think maybe putting something like ChatGPT into Google Docs, yeah, and then you're maybe that's going to be the future.
It's coming. Just come up with a quick essay for me. Copy it up. Thank you. And I mean, we also, you know, have touched on AI. Like, I could totally see I keep jokingly talk about Mr. Clippy for Revit that was like, oh, are you trying to draw some code compliant stairs? Let me help you with that. Well, poor Mr. Clippy's gone from Word, so you think he's looking for a new job.
Mr. Clippy's been out of a job for some time.
Yeah, I haven't seen him for a while, man.
No.
But I think you're right. There's like all these solutions around, right? So maybe the next question is, who is best to build the next version of BIM, right? Is it architects? Because we're classic, like, architects, we're architects. We're not even like the codey ones, even like myself, I can do certain bits, but I mean, my level to a software developer is just like epically different, right? So, and you often see architects like building their own tools. The classic was before Rhino Inside came out. Everyone has their own in-house tool and it kind of worked and it kind of didn't. Like, are architects the best to create this? Are software developers the best to create this because they need that understanding? Or is there like the sweet spot of like people like yourselves that have both sides of those coin, like who is best to make it? Because, you know, there's so many different components to it, right? What we have with Revit is from software engineers really, isn't it? It's not made by architects, so to speak.
Well, I suppose I don't think it was architects, but I think they were like, they had some, I don't know the Revit founders, but I think they had some experience from the building industry. But I can share some thoughts on this. I think that what needs to happen is that there's like two worlds that need to learn from each other, the IT industry and the architectural or the building industry. AEC and software needs to come closer. And that certainly was the mission of Bad Monkeys and Rio also and what we are trying to do. I don't think we are big enough to make such a gigantic impact on like the future of BIM today. But also that probably Revit wasn't that on day one, you know, so who knows who it's going to be. What I'm pretty sure of is that wave that started with Grasshopper and Dynamo and Python, like the generation of AEC designers learning how to code, is going to be very relevant for it, because that is the mechanism that is bringing these two worlds together. I think, right. I think architects, maybe it's like the building industry coming together in some capacity. Engineers are great at thinking logically and being systemized, and we need software developers who actually have like experience and education as software developers, but they need to know more about the AEC industry. Architects, I've heard, and I think also are great like founders and leaders of company, because a lot of the people that I know and that I've met are really, really good at selling their ideas and convincing people that what they believe is right, and like have a lot of social skills and good at salespeople. Like, I think I saw someone writing on LinkedIn recently, like architects are the perfect founders of companies because of this set of skills right. and I mean personalities. So maybe it's everyone. I've learned so much about business and like finances and how to make money and how to pitch and how to talk to investors. And I've learned so much about the mechanism of money in the industry through talking with contractors and building owners that maybe a structural engineer would never even, consider.
Yeah.
So,
do you think there could be a model a bit like the Band Monkeys, where it's almost, the industry comes together and, co-creates it, or like, co-funds it and co-creates it together in like this organization? Do you think that could work, or it's kind of like a scenario where you have too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak?
Well, that's the other side. That was maybe the case with the Band Monkeys. And we turned out to be like very similar in many ways. You probably want a little bit of a more diverse group than the Band Monkeys. But the idea, though, is pretty interesting. Maybe that's what needs to happen with the different startups, is that the different startups now trying to solve micro problems in their own sandbox need to get together in the same way that we brought the individuals together in the Band Monkeys back in the day. Maybe that's a pretty interesting idea.
There's something quite interesting, as I mentioned before, of like these, does blockchain have a component in this where you have like a autonomous businesses where your IP is registered on some kind of blockchain platform? I don't know if it's overcomplicating the system, but it seems like there's a new business model potentially arising, which is a bit more like a network, a collection of individuals, and you add your ideas into it, which are recorded as IP or something like that. But that could be an interesting model, that architects co-build something that solves them with engineers, with software developers and all this kind of stuff.
And contractors. I think it's gigantic potential to bring the contractors onto that train, the receivers of data. I don't know anything about blockchain, but I will tell you this, that probably, one of the big problems that we faced in the Band Monkeys was that, we were just seven guys, and to be able to start up something across like five different continents and so many different time zones and with very limited amount of resources in the beginning, it was just us. We didn't have any people working with us, and then solving issues like who owns what and IP and shares. And I just remember like in one of the discussions we had, the outcome or the decision that we made was that we're before anyone does anything, we should probably establish a holding company in the Cayman Islands that we can link the IP to, and that all the different companies can own shares and that come. And you're thinking like, oh, this is complicated.
Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting. That again, I don't know enough about, I know a bit about blockchain, but I kind of understand the idea of these blockchain business models, but I don't know the details of it. But I'm really interested. I should do it. Try and get someone on to explain it in a podcast. But I wonder if that.
Yeah, I think you absolutely should. I mean, if there's something, if something comes along that makes it much easier for people to interact and collaborate on something across all these like invisible divisions that we have, I think that's super interesting.
There we go. All we need is a Batman to bring the Avengers together, right? Or Captain America. It's Captain America for Batman, isn't it? It's
Captain America. I don't know. For the Avengers. Yeah. I was thinking about America. The boys, you know.
Who's good?
Yeah. We need Homelander.
Navad, you got to step up as Captain Norway for the BIM, Captain BIM, and assemble the Avengers.
With a Viking helmet,
yeah. Yeah, you could just be Thor. You could take over. Thor can run it. There you go. That's what we need. I think with many things right now, we're in like a super exciting time, and there's so many different things going on with design technology, like AI, blockchain, real-time rendering. It's almost hard to stay on top of these things, but you've still got the foundation of good old BIM, which is still our bread and butter, right? Like I said, I'll go back and I'll be using that right now. Is there anything outside of BIM that's really exciting you right now? I mean, you mentioned ChatGPT and other things. I know, I'm quite interested in Unreal 5 as well. I don't know if you looked into the Omniverse, NVIDIA's Omniverse, but that also has some potential as a space for the next, BIM era. Is there anything you're really excited about right now, or this AI stuff? Or
I have to be quite honest with you. I mean, what I'm mostly excited about now is building Anchor and building a business and talking to clients and investors. And like, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I can't sleep because there's so many things that I want to do. I told someone recently that I haven't been this motivated since like 10 years ago when I started with Dynamo. I love this, and I love building things, and I love building things together with really skilled people, which I'm lucky to do. So I think my excitement right now, my personal excitement, is more in the entrepreneurial space.
And that's really exciting. It's been great. Also, I have to give you massive props. I love your approach to your hiring videos, bringing people in. In fact, I'm going to put a link to some of them below, because I think, why are more people not doing this? Like, I loved your first video about when you launched Reope. I think your opening line was just like attention grabber. But I saw like the other day you were, looking for someone, and you just made a video about the post. And like, why are we making these stupid lists of bullet points that kind of talk about what you want when you can just say it? I have to give you big credit for that. I think that's a great idea.
Thank you so much, Ollie. There's something inside of me that again with the paradox, that is both a positive and sometimes a difficult attribute. Sometimes it gets me into trouble. It's like a thing inside of myself that gets a little bit annoyed with things when I see, maybe it was my issue with engineering. I was having trouble copying and repeating everything on every project, and like doing the same thing over and over again. So when I see a job advert that is like literally identical to a million other job adverts, I don't like it. And I guess I try to do something about that. But it's also like it creates a little bit of a restless soul, which can be sometimes a problem.
No, I think it's really good.
So that's my ex-wife.
No, I think it's good. I think it really marked what you're about and you know, reopen all that kind of stuff. I mean, usually since we're coming towards the end, I don't want to keep you for too much longer. We usually talk about a couple of things, like what advice would you give for upcoming architects, like tools and technologies that you think are interesting. But based on your last question, maybe we could also do like, you know, maybe there's people in the audience that have a side hustle or are working and they want to do what you did and jump on to do, you know, something else. What would be your kind of advice and tips for them? I mean, we've already got one is like, do it sooner than later, I guess. But is it, you know, when you made that jump, a lot of people talk about like, oh, I just quit my job and started something else. Like they woke up on Monday and handed their notice in and they were gone like 2 weeks ago. But then talking to a lot of other entrepreneurs, it was much more calculated. You know, people either save some money together and do it or try and get it going on the side. Yeah, maybe what would you advise for people that want to turn a side hustle into a full-time thing?
Everyone is different. So everyone, and I think like one of the core elements to finding a happy life, like to have a happiness in life, is to know yourself. So maybe the foundation, like point number one, if I was going to make a bullet point list, is to know yourself. You know, what kind of process are you comfortable with? I'm kind of impulsive person. So for me, it felt good to like, I didn't rage quit, but it was a little bit like impulsive. I didn't have an office and didn't know anything about anything. So for a lot of other people and also people that I know, they're like planning it out, you know, on Monday, I'm going to buy a chair. On Tuesday, I'm going to fix the Wi-Fi, like stuff like that. Probably not. I mean, that depends on how you're wired as a human being. I also think that a friend of mine asked me this question actually just a few days ago, and I don't remember exactly what I told him, but it was, I think that many people underestimate how difficult it is to get paid. And the moment you leave a company, maybe a lot of people think, you know, all my friends and all the people I work with today and all these clients that I worked with last year, they're all going to throw money at me, which is not the case. Like it's, that is really difficult. So there's like that's a serious risk. At the same time, maybe that risk is not so big as you think, because if it goes to hell and you're like, after 6 months, fuck this shit, I don't want to do it anymore, I can't sleep at night. You know, people like us can always get a job. So there's no real risk, at least, you know, in the part of the world where we are, Oliver. But so I was in that sense quite lucky because, as I said, I had someone knocking on the door with a contract saying, hey, would you like to help us on this project? Which is a great way to start.
Yeah, that's the dream, right? You have a project and you immediately have something to tackle. But that's interesting. Yeah, so, I see. So that's why it was for you is a bit more sporadic, because something came in which triggered you to like, let's do this. And you kind of went from there.
Yeah, it was both a social trigger. I mean, I mentioned the conversations I had with the other monkeys, but also like I understood that I'm in a time and a space where there's like a wave coming. The wave that's coming is all the programming architects and engineers. And they're going to need help scaling their Grasshopper scripts and Dynamo scripts and Python scripts. So that was a very conscious decision, but that is like a vision. It's not a contract. So I guess I was pretty lucky to actually have clients and have a project to go and work on day one.
That's awesome. My backdrop is falling apart. This one poster, I swear to God, this one poster just keeps on. It's going to come down in a minute, but anyway.
Looks like your things are not so good at BIG.
Yes. Yeah. Have you got any funding for ATN? This is what we're working with at ATN, right? No, I think that's a really good point. It's kind of each to your own unique thing. Do you have a view on, you know, one route that people take which again, you know, it'll be a personal and business thing, is funding, like VC funding. You know, some people, some entrepreneurs I speak to think it's a great way to do it, especially if you have to, you know, create something big at the beginning that's going to scale. But other people just want to avoid it like the plague. You know, they don't want other people's money coming in and that kind of thing. But do you think that's a, do you have an opinion on, you know, transitioning to companies through funding and all that kind of stuff?
Sort of. We have never gotten funding. We have everything that we have built that we now sell as a licensed service, like tools, we have built through our consultancy operation. So we never had to ask anyone for money. Like everything's been funded by ourselves, which has given us a lot of autonomy. That said, I mean, we're talking with investors right now, so it's quite a possibility for Anchor at some point to have investors. And in that, I don't have a lot of experience. I imagine that if you, you know, again, I think you should ask yourself what kind of person you are. How do you like to work? Because getting investors is totally depends, as I've learned, totally depends on the type of company that is investing in you. But yeah, they can be close and they can be far away. And it's, yeah. So, but it's kind of like a marriage. So, you know, if you're a very... if
professional
you're,
marriage.
Yeah, professional marriage. So, I mean, if you know that you have maybe problems with people interfering and asking difficult questions about your yeah. business, then maybe it's not the thing for you. But if that's fine yeah. and you need it, then why not?
Great. Maybe to wrap up, let's talk about the young architects or architects in the audience and engineers for that matter as well. Like, what's your advice for staying up to date with technology? And I think we've already gone over one, go to conferences. That is like, I think for both of you and I, it's been a big part of our career. I think so many opportunities have come from conferences and meeting yeah. people. What's your should architects learn to code? What's your
I view? I hope more architects learn to code. I think it's an amazing thing. I don't think it's necessarily for everyone. Again, it depends on your personality and your preference. I think it's coding for an architect is a great way to be autonomous, to be effective, to learn new things, to develop the brain, to enhance your thinking and problem solving. It's also an amazing opportunity to actually feel creativity at work. If that is like, if you're doing detailed projecting, detailed design all day long, coding is a great way to actually feel creativity in your work. So there's so many upsides about coding. I don't think it's for everyone. I think the first thing I thought of was like the curiosity, like stay curious. Yeah. Isn't that that's a commercial of Steve Jobs or something? Like, I don't know, but
I like it. It's you're rebranding it.
I don't understand why so many architects that I met in my life was not more curious about the tools that they used. You know, you just come into the office, turn on the coffee machine, and then click, 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 click in Revit and go home. You know, there's like a bunch of things you can do in there. You know, everything is not perfect, but like stay curious about the tools that you're using. I think I read sometime that Michelangelo, the painter, he made his own brushes. And like that kind of level, maybe it's not needed, but that's kind of how I feel when I make my own script and like design my own workflow. And so, open the, what's it called? The thing of the car.
Yeah.
The hood.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to end it and a great bit of advice. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I think this has been a great, I almost feel like this is a part one. We've got some future parts to come. But I think maybe this is a good point to jump off. I don't know if there's anything you want to add or anything that's coming up or any conference talks that you're doing. I'll put in to the video below links to Reop and all other kind of stuff so people listening can check it out. But yeah, I don't know if is there anything. What's the best way if people want to reach out? Is the best way to reach out to you? Is it through LinkedIn or how can people get in touch?
I think the best way to reach out to me is through LinkedIn. You can also find my email and phone number on the website of Reop. And especially if you want to text me, like WhatsApp is usually a good, we talk on WhatsApp, only, yeah. And I like it. And then, something is happening in May that I'm pretty excited about. I think it's going to happen. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. It's not confirmed, but I think I'm going to be in New York in May at the New York City Revit User Group, and I'm going to talk about mental health and well-being, which is something that I think cool. is a big like Pandora's box in AEC yeah. tech. A lot of high shoulders cool. out there.
Yeah.
And that is something I'm very excited about. So
great. Well, we'll keep posted for that. We'll look forward to it. So yeah, check out any of Harvard's links in the description below. I should get used to doing this thing. But yeah, and you're hiring as well, so check out the website if you've got some skills. But no, thank you so much for joining. I think we'll wrap this one up here. I think we will have another podcast coming in a couple weeks, and it should be on the topic of space architecture. We're going to talk to a space architect, Melody, from Icon, which is our 3D printing company that we've been collaborating with. But for today, thank you for joining us. I think this has been a great, this almost seems like a primer for future ones. We're definitely going to have some more BIM chats along the way, but
we have more to talk about, Ollie.
Yeah, but thank you so much, and we'll speak to you in the next episode.